So we're going to talk about jealousy and envy. And often when people look at jealousy and envy, myself included, I would have sort of thought, well, aren't they pretty much the same thing? And they're not. I don't know if anybody's really going to need a seatbelt, because writing this sermon felt sort of like writing a dictionary, where you're sitting there trying to figure out what the difference are between these two words. And when I first read the chapter in the book, when I got to the end of it, I thought, wow, I've got no idea what he's talking about. Especially when it comes down to trying to differentiate between, well, what's jealousy and what's envy. So then I went and I read like these different actual journalist people trying to differentiate between the two words. And I think that we'll try to cover somewhat today. But I think that's a valuable process for people to go through on their own time, so that we can properly identify the sin that could be in our lives. Because if we sort of just go, well, I'm pretty sure they're all the same thing, then we're pretty sure we're missing one thing. Because if two things can only be one thing, then you're missing one thing. So we're going to start with envy because it's a little bit more defined. Jealousy sort of came into the English vocabulary in about the 13th century. And since then, because of sort of this misunderstanding of what it really means, its meaning has sort of changed over time. And they have like a scale, I guess they use, of how much a word has actually taken on a new meaning. So it's a 2 out of 5. So that'd sort of be like if somebody said, oh, that's really cool, and you think, well, oh, so it's cold, and they said, no, it's cool, and the meaning has sort of changed. That's what's happening with jealousy. So we'll start with envy because it's a little bit more black and white. So envy can simply be defined as painful and sometimes resentful awareness of an advantage enjoyed by someone else. So you're looking at somebody and they have something that you don't have, and you want it. And what starts to happen then is you start to resent that person, and you become angry at that person, not because of really who they are or what they're doing, but simply because they have been given an advantage that you did not get. So there's really two conditions that typically come into play for envy to take hold. And the first would be that it's somebody that you can closely identify with, somebody who is similar to you. So as a teacher or a preacher, I do not identify or have any envious feelings towards John MacArthur. I don't have any, they just wouldn't even be there. He is on a different level. Alistair Begg is on a different level than, to be honest, anyone who stands in this pulpit. He's just different. And I don't look at Alistair and go, like, what is going on here? I don't even have my own radio broadcast yet. Like, how is this fair? That doesn't happen. Where I could become envious is of somebody like Nicholas, somebody who is a similar age to me. We grew up together, but he's got the full-time gig. And I could look at him and go, you know, why does he have that and I don't? I don't even want to be a pastor. You don't even need to want to have the advantage that the other person has. You just need to notice that he has it, that he's got this full-time job. You know, he's got just a little bit more of a shine on him. He gets a name tag. And I could sit there and be envious of him and start to resent the fact that he has that. It's not a sin for me to be aware that Nicholas has an advantage. It's when I start to resent him, when I start to be angry at him for the mere fact that he has something that I don't in an area that I would have value on. So I would put value on being a good or gifted teacher or preacher. I have no value at all on being a good singer. I'm not a good singer, and I don't really want to be. So I'm not envious of Suzanne, that she can sit there and go, da, 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 da. See, that's why I don't sing, because that was my very best effort. She's trying to convince me to. And it is, they've been trying to convince me to sing ever since those Christmas recitals that I would stand in the very back and go like this. If you say watermelon, it looks like you're singing. So I have no envy of people who are musically inclined because it's not something I value. When we are going to envy, it's that we've noticed someone has an advantage. It's somebody we can relate to, somebody that we sort of feel like we could be on par with, but they have this advantage, and then it's something that we actually value. When I was a lot younger, my brother and I, we were out swinging in the backyard, and he was able to swing higher than me. So he had an advantage, and we are fairly, you know, we're fairly close in age. He's younger, so really, you know, that's another in there. But he could swing higher, and he had this advantage over me. So what I did is we had these swings that were wooden, so they were like a piece of, I believe, 2x6 that we swung on. So I took my swing, and I threw it at him. So he was come up, and he came back and caught him in the back of the head with it. And he went down. He cried for his mother. And like when you cut a head open, it bleeds a lot, so there was a lot of blood, and he had to get stitches. But that incident happened because he had an advantage over me. I became aware of it, and then I resented him for it. And then off of that, then we had an assault happen where I threw a swing at him. But really, that incident was based off of me being envious of him being able to swing higher. And that became not only the foundation for envy, but also the foundation for further sin. In Proverbs 14:30, it says, "A heart at peace gives life to the body, but envy rots the bones." And I think one of the things about rot is that rot takes time. If you're doing, say, woodworking, and you leave your wood out and it gets water on it, and you dry it off, you're probably okay. But if you just leave it outside and it just sits there, it's touching the ground, over time it's going to rot. And envy is like that it's a sin that can just hide away, that we might not even realize that we're doing it, or that we're suffering from it, and it just sort of hides there, and it sort of rots away, and it destroys us. So we have first this awareness, and you need to be aware of this sin, and that's not the sin. And then once we focus on it too much, we get into envy. And the problem can be when we spend too much time focused on other people and focused on their advantage. Master Yoda said, "When you look at the dark side, careful you must be, for the dark side looks back." And when we look at people, we just focus on their advantages. That's when the devil is looking back at us and saying, "That's my opening there. That's where I just need to plant a little bit of resentment, a little bit of anger, and then their wicked nature will do the rest." And if we sit and we stare at people's awareness, then we're opening ourselves up to envy. It's not a sin to be aware that someone has an advantage over you, but it's extremely dangerous to put too much time and effort into watching that advantage and looking at it, because that's where the devil can say, "All right, that's my foothold. Now I've got him." When I was in university, the final exams would be held in the gym, so then the locker room was off of there. So after we would finish our exams, we would go to the locker room and we would change and we'd go work out. And while we were in there, this one guy that was in our class, he came in, and what he would do is he would shove his notes down his pants, and he would say, "Oh, I've got to go to the bathroom." So he would go into the bathroom and he'd sit in the stall and he'd pull out his notes and he would read to try to figure out how to get the correct answer. He had an unfair advantage. And we knew it because we were all there. And then he would come out and be like, "What did you get for number 3? And we'd be like, "I'm not telling you." But we were aware that he had that advantage, and it was unfair. And I think at that point, it's easy to start to justify being envious of that person or to resent that person, that they're cheating. They're devaluing my degree because now it's cheaper because you can just cheat your way to it. And I could become resentful and angry to that person. The fact that he cheated on exams is on him. But if I look at that advantage and I let that become resentment and anger, and I then start to sin based off of that, that's on me. The fact that we can look at somebody else and say, it's not fair that they have that advantage, maybe it's not. But that doesn't then justify us becoming envious of them. It doesn't justify our resentment. Scripturally, we have lots of examples of envy. If we go right back almost to the beginning with Cain and Abel. Now, Abel kept flocks, and Cain worked the soil. In the course of time, Cain brought some of the fruit of the soil as an offering to the Lord, and Abel also brought an offering, fat portions from some of the firstborn of his flock. The Lord looked with favor on Abel and his offering. So at this point, Abel has an advantage. He has the favor of God, but on Cain and his offering, he did not look with favor. So Cain does not have the advantage. So Cain was very angry, and his face was downcast. So at this point, we now have advantage, no advantage. No advantage has noticed that his brother has an advantage, and he really instantly becomes envious, and we have this anger form, and he starts to get really sad about it. Then the Lord said to Cain, why are you angry? Why is your face downcast? If you do what is right, will you not be accepted? But if you do not do what is right, sin is crouching at your door. So now we have this image again of sin watching us and waiting, and it's found its spot, it's found that foothold, and it's just waiting to jump out. It desires to have you, but you must rule over it. Now Cain said to his brother Abel, let's go out to the field. And while they were in the field, Cain attacked his brother Abel and killed him. Then the Lord said to Cain, where is your brother Abel? So in this story, we really see the very first homicide in the history of mankind, a homicide that was built upon one brother being envious of another brother. Luckily, when I was envious of my brother, I just cut open the back of his head. He's still alive and well. So, when we go a little bit further into the biblical story, we come to Joseph, and he had a very clear advantage. He had his father's love, and it was not you didn't have to wonder as to who was the favorite. In our family, we kind of wonder if maybe Marion's the favorite, because she's the best one of us. And, she's probably the favorite. But there's no, I don't have any, they're just trying not to react back there. No, we don't have a favorite, and if we did, it would be Philip. But we don't really have any evidence for that. There's really, it's just, Marion's probably the favorite. But for Joseph, he had his coat of many colors. He was clearly the favorite. And then he had his dreams. And I think that in this story, we have envy, but we also have people who created the environment. Jacob created an environment where everyone in his family knew that Joseph was the favorite. Nobody had to wonder who has the advantage here. Joseph had the advantage. Joseph had the special coat. Then Joseph himself, he knows that his brothers don't like him. But he still has this dream. And he comes to his brother and he goes, guess what, guys? I had a dream last night. And you guys are all going to bow to me. And then when he has another one, he decides that, you know what I should do? I should go do the same thing at breakfast again and tell the brothers who already resent me for being special that I'm still special, but this time mom and dad are going to bow to me too. And I think in this story, we see a situation where as a parent, we can create an environment in our family where where envy can very easily grow. Anytime, really, that we're in a leadership position, we can create below us an environment in which envy can very easily grow. And then as the person who has received the advantage, we can then rub that advantage in the faces of the people who do not have it and continue to sort of open up that foothold so that envy can grow. Now, although I think that we in our own lives, we need to look and say, are we doing that in different parts of our life? Are we creating, sort of putting out stumbling blocks for other people? Ultimately, the brother's sin falls upon the brother. So you cannot look and say that you know, this is such a blatant situation of somebody else getting an unfair advantage, and you know, and they're rubbing it in my face, so they do, you know, I have a right to hate them. I have a right to resent them. That doesn't exist. You don't have a right to sin. That if you're in that position where you're looking at that unfair advantage, envy is still on you. If you let resentment into your heart, if you hate them, that's on you. I think it's important to look at the other side of it in our own lives as we sort of how we conduct our own business, that we're not setting up stumbling blocks. But ultimately, again, that is not an excuse for the brothers to sell their brother into slavery just because, well, dad gave him a special coat, so he had it coming. When I was going through this the final time, after I was done adding in words, I thought of Eve back in the garden, right at the very beginning, and that really, it could very easily be envy that was the foundation that Satan used. He goes to her and says, you know, do you want to know the difference between good and evil? Because he does, because God knows. And Satan comes to her and he points out that God has an advantage over you. Don't you think you deserve that too? And that desire and that sort of resentment towards God for knowing more than she did could very easily have been the foundation that brought the very first sin into the world, that then brings the very first homicide into the world, and continues to be just a wonderful foundation for Satan to just pile sin after sin on today. Now, that's envy. So envy is really, the easiest way to differentiate between envy and jealousy is that envy is it's something that you don't have ownership of. So it's a blessing that you don't own and you want it, or a thing that you don't own and you want it. While jealousy is different, jealousy, you have ownership of the thing that you're jealous for. So first off, I want to address right jealousy, which would be God. And I think that it can be a very dangerous avenue to go down, because jealousy is this word that sort of has lost its meaning and it's become somewhat fluid, that we start to look at God and say, these are things that he did, so I'm going to model my life after that. He is perfect, and he is able to do things without sinning that we are simply not capable of doing as human beings. I think of Jesus, that he goes to the temple, and people are sinning in the temple. They're selling their sacrificial animals for extraordinary prices, and he looks at it and says, you're degrading the house of God, and he makes a whip, and he goes in, and he clears out that temple. And he's throwing tables, and you know, we don't know if he hit anybody with the whip, but he had a whip. And we've got this angry Jesus going through, throwing things around. And it is very dangerous then to look at and say, well, isn't that a nice model that I can follow? When I see something that's wrong, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go in there and I'm going to tell everybody just what I think. I'm going to go up one side of them, down the other, just like JC did. It's going to be great. And I think that that's really dangerous for us to do, because he was able to go in with that godly anger and clear out the temple and not sin. Where for us, if we go in there, that line of being able to go, like, that line is so close for us that It would be dangerous, I believe, to model ourselves after that characteristic of Jesus Christ, because it would be very easy for us to fall into sin. I think with God and jealousy, again, we don't want to look and say, well, God's jealous, so it must be a pretty good quality to have. So with God in Exodus 20, verse 5, we see, do not bow in worship to them and do not serve them. For I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, punishing the children for the father's iniquities to the third and fourth generation of those who hate me. So in this case, we have this idea of ownership. So God is jealous of our worship. Now, God legitimately has a claim upon the worship of mankind. So he is jealous for something that is rightfully his. And that is a special, that is a unique component of this right jealousy, is that it's legitimately his. And then zealous would have, way back in the beginning of English, have come from, you know, jealousy and zealous sort of came from the idea. It's this adamant defense. So he is jealous of worship, which he owns. So he has a rightful claim to that, and that he is adamantly going to defend that worship. So when we say that God is a righteous or a jealous God, we are saying that he is aware that he owns that and he will adamantly defend it. And we see that as he punishes the children for their father's iniquities, and he is willing to do what needs to be done to defend what is his. When we take that over into the human realm, that could become a much more dangerous thing for us to try to emulate. Sinful jealousy is angry or afraid that someone is going to be equal or even superior to us. So intolerant of rivalry. So this would be the idea that something is ours, that we have some blessing or some ability or some, you know, little position of authority, and that's ours. And if somebody else tries to come in and take that, then we are going to become angry and we are going to try to fight them off to sort of keep what is ours. So that would become sinful jealousy. We use the example of if you're in a play and you're the lead and you've got all the lights on you. You're the star of the show. And, you know, you start to get a little bit older. And all of a sudden, there's this younger, better-looking understudy. You know, and they can do things that you can't do. And, you know, they can hit the higher notes, and you're really struggling to hit them. And you start to look at them and say, you know, they're coming for what's mine. And I'm going to do whatever I can to trip them up. I'm going to make sure that if they're going to try to take what's mine, it's going to be as hard for them as it possibly can be. And you start to just do things, and you attack them, and you're saying mean things to them, and you're spreading gossip about them, trying to bring down their career because they're coming for yours. And that would be where we start to come into that sinful jealousy, where we sort of decided that something's ours. And for a time, it legitimately was. But that has changed. And now we become very angry and resentful while we try to protect that we don't want to have a rival. We see examples of jealousy also in Scripture, particularly in a transitional phase. So before Jesus comes, you have the high priests, and they have an extreme amount of influence over Israel, and specifically to sort of the religious part of Israel, but really, they just had an extreme amount of influence. And then Jesus comes, and he kind of completely changes everything. And now we have Peter, is the person in this story. Many signs and wonders were being done amongst the people through the hands of the apostles. Believers were added to the Lord in increasing numbers. Multitudes came together from the towns surrounding Jerusalem, bringing the sick and those who were tormented by unclean spirits, and they were all healed. So we have Peter and his apostles at this point. The blessing of God has shifted onto them. And the priests, the high priest realizes this. Then the high priest rose up. He and all who were with him, who belonged to the party of the Sadducees, were filled with jealousy. So they arrested the people and put them in public jail. So the high priest, he's had this blessing, or at least this power that's been allotted to him, and he starts to see that shift, that now the people are starting to gravitate towards the apostles, and he doesn't want to see that happen. He doesn't want a rival. He has this authority, it's his, and he's going to do what he can to defend it. So he throws them into jail. As this transition continues, we see in Acts 13, 44 to 45, the following Sabbath, almost the whole town assembled to hear the word of the Lord. But when the Jews saw the crowds, they were filled with jealousy and began to contradict what Paul was saying, insulting him. So again, we have this situation where God's blessing has shifted to a new group of people, and the people who were left behind are going, wait a minute, that's us. That's our blessing, and you're not going to send it over there. And they become jealous of those people, and then they start to, you know, try to contradict Paul and try to tear him down as a result of their jealousy, because they've had this blessing and it's been taken away from them. Jealousy arises when a group of individuals feel they are about to be supplanted from a role they believe to be theirs. And so you have this intolerance to rivalry. So you have what's yours, and nobody had better come and take it. And when God blesses an area of our lives or ministry, we notice that blessing being moved to someone else. So this new rival can simply have just more gifting or ability than you have. And this transitional phase, it happened in Scripture, but it's always going to happen. We're always going to have a ministry that we're involved in and that we really value and that we've poured our time and our efforts into and that the Lord has blessed us. And then there's going to become a time where it's somebody else's job and where now they're supposed to go in. And as that person who's sitting there going, well, this is my role, if we can be aware and say that this is the Lord moving the blessing to somebody else and be supportive, then we can really move forward. But if we go, wait a minute, no, that's my thing. That's where I've found value and identified, and now it's going away, and you become jealous of the person that it's gone on to, then we just end up with infighting and resentment towards each other because it's going, well, God's moved the blessing. And it's nothing that that person did. It's nothing that either person did. God has moved the blessing. But we have this jealousy come in. And when we have an area that we're being blessed and we see that shift, we need to be willing to be helpful. You see it in sports all the time that you'll have this veteran guy who he's been the star of the show for a long time. Some people will, but Ray Bourque was one of the greatest defensemen to ever play the game. And he was able to run a team. And he ran the Boston Bruins for a long time and never won a championship. And then he was able to then go and take, and he went to Colorado as, I believe, 41. So for hockey, ancient. And he was able to go there and sort of play a supplementary role as Ray Bourque, the former great defenseman. And he played that role, and he played it well, and the Colorado Avalanche won the Stanley Cup, and Joe Sakic handed the cup to Ray Bourque, and he was the second person to hoist the cup because it was Ray Bourque, this former great player. But he was able to say that the blessing of being phenomenal has sort of shifted onto the younger guys. So I'm going to support them. I'm going to be there and help them. And when they have those big losses that they need somebody that's been around for a while to say something, then I'll speak up and do it. But I don't need to be the one scoring all the goals anymore. And he was able to take that backseat role, and he ended up getting a Stanley Cup out of it. And it's no different in our lives, whether it's in business or whether it's in the church, that there are times that we're going to be taking a backup role. And that if we can do that role really well, then either that business or that church can be very successful. But as we lose, if we allow jealousy to creep in, that's when we just end up with infighting and you're not going to get anywhere or go anywhere very quick, because you're going to be so busy trying to trip up the people beside you because they might be getting a little bit of blessing that you're not going to get anywhere at all. You're all just going to end up in a pile of just a mess of jealousy. But we need to be aware that these both of these sins, jealousy and envy, they're really easy to get in. They're really easy to sneak in on us. And they become this perfect foundation because we don't just, this perfectly wicked foundation, because we don't just become jealous, we don't just become envious, we then take the swing and we throw it at the back of our brother's head. That we ask them to go for a walk out in the field and we murder them. That when we have jealousy and sin in our lives, they're important to root out because they can become the foundation to just a myriad of other sins. Which brings us to, what is the cure for jealousy and envy? And I feel like it's a little bit of a cliche or hard to fully understand when people just say, well, you just need to bring it to Jesus. And you go, well, you know, how do I bring it to Jesus? Like, how am I supposed to do that? You know, really, at the very base level, you need to have Jesus Christ in your life. You need to accept him as your Savior. You need to allow him to be the Lord of your life. And you go, well, I already did that. And I think if we're honest with ourselves, all of us are going to be able to find spots in our lives where we go, well, I might be a little bit jealous of that. I might be a little bit envious of that. And for the majority of us, we can also look back at a time that we gave our lives to Jesus Christ. And we go, well, I've already gone to Jesus. And it's still there. And I think that what I would like to look at is sort of some biblical tools that we can use to combat envy and jealousy in our lives. The first is 1 Corinthians 4:7. For who makes you different from anyone else? What do you have that you did not receive? And if you did not receive it, why do you boast as though you did not? 1 Corinthians 4:7. And I think this first point is to be aware that God is sovereign, that he is in control, and that he is right, and that he is the one giving out talents. So if we see somebody else receiving a talent, I think it's important that we remember that God, in his infinite wisdom, has chosen to give a talent, ability, a special opportunity. He has chosen to give it to that person. And I think when we're aware of that and we don't look at it so much as like, well, they didn't deserve that. Well, they just got it, because then we come up with some great conspiracy as to why they got it and nobody else did. But to leave all of that behind and just to be aware that God is still up there and he's still in control. And he is giving out talents to different people. And if he chooses to give you a talent, that's great. Do the talent he's given you. But if he doesn't give you a talent, then we don't need to become envious of the person who did. And if he shifts your talent, then we don't need to become jealous of the person that it was shifted to, because we can rely on the fact that God is in control and he is choosing where these different blessings and abilities and giftings lie. Secondly, 1 Samuel 2:7, the Lord sends poverty and wealth. He humbles and he exalts. Psalm 75:7, it is God who judges. He brings one down and he exalts another. So again, this rise and fall that will happen throughout our lives, where we can be risen up into a position of prominence, and then maybe for no reason of our own, that the Lord sees necessary to bring us down. And then we go back up, and these ebbs and flows of feeling blessed or feeling useful, that those go up and down, and to realize again that it's the Lord that's controlling that. So if we see somebody else getting risen up and we become jealous of them, or we become envious of them, depending on which end of the spectrum you're on, you're just getting mad at somebody because they've been given a gift. You wouldn't sit there on Christmas morning and be mad at somebody else because they received a gift that you wanted. You might look at the gift giver and go, oh, I guess you didn't get my hints. But you're not going to look at the person beside you and go, who do you think you are getting given that? You want to go for a walk in the field? It doesn't make any logical sense. But when we look at God's blessings, we don't always look at it as that black and white. And I think in a lot of ways we need to, that these are gifts. And that if somebody else has a gift that you wanted, then that's a conversation that you need to have with the Almighty. It's not something that you need to look at them and hold it against them. You need to speak to the Lord and say, you know, why? Why am I where I'm at? Because, you know, I really thought that I was doing a good job there, and now I'm out of there. So if you have a problem with your ability being shifted to somebody else or somebody else having something that you want, it's not a matter of let's get angry at the person. That's the devil. That's the sin. Let's get angry at the person. And I'm not suggesting you get angry at God. I'm suggesting that you have a conversation with him. And he's probably heard it all. I think you want to remember that he's God Almighty, but you can also be frank with him and say, I'm lost here. I don't know what's going on. But it's a conversation with him, not anger towards other people because he chose to give them a gift. Secondly, so in Christ, we, though many, from one body and each member belong to the other. 1 Corinthians 4:7. One in Christ. When one member rises up and becomes successful, we should be celebrating that. Because that means that the church is becoming successful. And that can go even beyond the confines of one church, that if we see another assembly of believers that's really doing something well, we should be celebrating them. If another church is full and bustling, and we shouldn't be looking at them and going, what are they up to? You know, they're probably just, you know, they're seeker sensitive. They're, you know, they're letting their convictions go to try to get people in the door, I bet. Maybe we should just look at those people and celebrate for them and say, you know, there's a part of the church, a part of the church that we're involved in that's thriving and that's excelling. And then when we bring it into our own church community, as we see members who are really being used by the Lord and really being blessed, that are being given opportunities that maybe we would like and that we could look at and go, well, what about me? That rather than doing that, we're looking at them and we're celebrating with them that they are being blessed. And if we're celebrating with them and we're praying for them and we're focused on the success that people are having and rejoicing in that, then there's no longer that foothold for the devil to peer out at and go, well, there it is. Because we're too busy celebrating that as a team, as the army of Jesus Christ, that we are successful, not as an individual, 1, 2, 3, we're successful. I believe in that too, it's important that when we have a smaller, perhaps a job that we feel is more menial, that we remain focused on that and we do a really good job of that. When Ray Bourque was on that championship team, when he was on the ice, he was out there thinking, I'm secondary now. So he's just sort of out there taking shifts off. And every time that he's on the ice, they're getting lit up. They're not going to win a championship. They're going to lose because he wasn't doing his job, although from what he'd had before, it was a menial position. Since he's not doing that well anymore, the team starts to fail. And that's easy to do when we have a job that doesn't seem that important. I keep rubbing my finger because last night I scroll saw a lot, and I was cutting out shapes for my wife that are pretty like easy and mundane, and they're just like, so they're not that exciting to do. And I sort of quit paying attention, and I ran my finger into the blade, and my nail caught it, so it didn't cut me very bad. But I wasn't paying attention as much as I should have been when I was doing my job because it was easy. It was this menial little task that I don't really, you know, just cut these things out. And all of a sudden you've cut your finger. And it can be the same in life, that we have these little tasks that we go, well, you know, I'm not at the front, like I'm just, you know, plugging away here, doing my, nobody's even noticing me. And then you aren't doing your role within the Christian community well, and all of a sudden the whole community starts to fall off. And that's hard to do, because it is nice to be at the front. It is nice, I think, as humans to be, you know, that we're getting the recognition and we've got a role that people notice. And I think that, I mean, that's where we really have to be careful on the pride end of things too. But I think we like that. So it is a lot harder, at least for me, to be like, well, that seems like a menial job. Like, you know, I'm supposed to check the culverts outside and look at them and see if they're full of sand, and I never get around to it because they're probably not full. It doesn't matter. Right? It's easy to take those jobs, and then at some point they're going to fill up and we're going to have a flood and it's going to be on me. So we have to, regardless of where we are, remember that we are one body, top or bottom. Everybody needs to be pushing, because that's the role that the Lord has given you. Finally, and perhaps the most important, is with a secret sin like this, is to become aware that it exists and to be willing to admit that, yeah, I probably have some spots in my life where I'm letting jealousy creep in, that I'm having a hard time letting go and celebrating for the person. Or that, you know, that, you know, you're looking at other people going, look at that guy, he gets everything, and you've sort of let envy creep in. I think, at least for myself, if we're honest with ourselves, I'd be shocked if there's anyone sitting here who can go, not me. You know, I've never even really struggled with that. I guess that's your cross to bear. I'd be shocked if there's anyone out there. The psychiatrist type people, they have these two words. They've got suppression, which is where you would have something that you're aware that you want to do. You're aware that it's your nature, and you stop yourself, or you repress, or you suppress yourself from doing it. And that's healthy. It's healthy to be aware that you are prone to sin and be working, I believe, along with the Lord, if you're going to have any chance of being successful at it, but you're going to be working to try to stop that from happening. But it's important that first we admit that it could happen. While on the other side, we have repression. And that would be the person who is denying completely that this could be a problem for me. And that is really not helpful at all, because it is happening for you, and you're just sort of sitting there going, no, not me. And you're no longer even taking steps to stop it, because you've stopped yourself even considering that you could be doing it. And I think with a sin like envy or jealousy, where they are these secret sins, and they very easily can sort of sneak into how you view the world and how you view the people around you, and then they can just rot away at your bones, because they're sitting there, and it's how you view the world, and it's always how you viewed the world, and you really don't take the time to assess it and go, wait a minute, that is sin. That is inside of me, and it just rots away. And I believe with a secret sin, none of you can accuse me of jealousy or envy, because you can't see it. You can't look at me and say, oh, yeah, that's envy. That's what's hidden away in his heart. That it's secret in that we really have to see it. We have to be willing to expose it, and we have to be willing to bring it to God. Because it's just the only person that's not going to be kept a secret from is him. So when we have these secret sins, we need to be willing to admit that they exist, willing to admit that we could be prone to doing them, or that we are doing them. And then we need to bring those out into the light of God. And we need to bring them to God and say, this is a real struggle for me. Or this is something I'd never even realized that was a struggle, but it turns out that it might be an issue. And bring those to God. And then I think with him and with his strength, and then by reflecting on what is in his word, that's where we can go to the sort of the cliche, bring it to Jesus, and that we can actually start to work towards having victory over these sins in our lives. Thank you.